One thing I love about the stories you hear each week on the show is that every brand starts with a story. Behind every product is the founder who took a chance on an idea, overcame challenges, and worked hard to bring it to life. Walmart is making it easier for customers to discover products from small brands and support the people behind them. With thousands of small brands available through Walmart, customers can discover innovative products while learning about the entrepreneurs and stories that brought them to life. By helping connect these brands with communities across the country, Walmart is creating more opportunities for founders to grow and share what makes their products unique. Visit walmart.com to learn more.
You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact you may not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. Visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey folks, welcome to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun relates to you having a happier, healthy relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us today, sharing with us your friends and families. But folks, we've got something special today. Today I'm joined by Hannah Tilson. She's the CEO of Mindstone. See, Hannah specializes in translating complex AI concepts into simple, actionable strategies, enabling teams across organizations to adopt AI in their everyday work, build AI-first operating models. One of the big things that people don't realize right now is artificial intelligence, and maybe you already have, continues to dominate headlines, reshape industries. Businesses are under growing pressures to move beyond error experimentation and deliver results because, you know what? Everybody else is too. Yet many organizations remain unprepared, lacking skills, strategy, confidence to embed AI into day-to-day services. Hannah provides these practical, real-world guidance. Now, what does this mean to you? But you're seeing all over the place, from the company that puts together the Cash App, Mr. Dorsey, he eliminated 20% of his workforce, and the email to the employees was, hey, AI has replaced you. So we're seeing with Apple, Amazon, we're seeing it also with Microsoft and others. It's something special. I think people need to understand what's going on with it. And that's why we have Hannah. Hannah, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Now, let's just start. AI's gotten started. OpenAI, ChatGPT, people are using it. They're loving it. It's making letters and a lot of things a lot easier. But you know what? There's a skill crisis here. And I was wondering if you could just share with our listeners what that is, how it impacts people and things like that.
Yes, absolutely, Steve. Thank you. We've had AI come along. Everybody will have heard of ChatGPT by now and OpenAI that makes it. But what we've found is that actually it's one of those tools that it can do so many different things for so many people. But there are some really foundational skills that we as humans need to learn in order to help us get the best out of it. So as a good example, if you started a new job and you were asked to take on a team of your own, perhaps it's the first time you've ever had a team. you're probably sat there thinking, I'm not quite sure how to lead a team. And in most instances, one of your colleagues who's had that experience before will probably come and give you a bit of guidance, a few tips about actually how do you manage and run a team. And it's very much the same with AI. So what we've seen is that actually, although everybody has got access to these tools, there's a real distinction between those that have built some very practical, actually very straightforward and simple skills in terms of the real benefit and the step change in value that they can create for both themselves, but also their extended teams and their families as well, compared to those who essentially have picked it up and have used it without any of that kind of guidance. So what you can really see is for some of these people and companies where they're saying they're seeing these real step changes, often when you look beneath the surface, it's because they've empowered themselves with some very simple but impactful skills. And that's where we see this AI skills gap, this skills crisis emerging. And that is very much something that we're trying to help fill.
It's really interesting when you talk about building or self-empowering somebody to build those skills. One of my relatives, she was a great coder for computers and all that stuff. Went to go work for Amazon, and she made a ton of money out of high school, the whole shot. And now she's part of the layoff because AI is taking over what she used to do.
Indeed. Yeah, we're in a really interesting moment in time, Steve. Software engineering is a particularly interesting area. It's one that we have a lot of exposure to because essentially the people that have developed AI are software engineers by their nature. So as they develop this amazing new tool, the first thing they thought about was, you know, how do we help make people's lives easier with it? And of course, the thing that they knew the best was what they did, how to code. And that led to a lot of that experimentation there. What we also, though, see is that, so for example, I was talking to our CTO the other day, and he made the comment that he hasn't actually written a line of code in a year. And he said, I spent 20 years of my career building this incredibly specialist skill set. And he said, actually, there is a degree of kind of identity change that comes with that. However, what he does do is that he says, actually, because I've got that experience, I know how to architect and steer it. So now, rather than being the person playing the instrument, I become the conductor. And so he essentially is now guiding these AI tools that are helping him and his team to essentially build software. But he is steering it based on his knowledge of what is really good practice in software development, and also based on his experience of how and where have things gone wrong for me in the past. And I think this is a point that's actually really overlooked, which is sometimes people can think of digital natives, Gen Z, who've grown up with smartphones in their pocket, that they are going to be the best people to use AI. Actually, a lot of life experience gives you some really valuable context to then use and steer a tool like this, because you've got precisely that experience that you can draw upon to point it in the right direction.
Wow. And we see the software side of this, but I have to assume, and you have a lot more experience than I do, but when you start taking a look at, for example, the auto industry or the auto manufacturing industry, and they already have robots, they can now use less people to actually do the same thing using AI. Am I correct in that?
So there are some activities where actually we do know that AI is able to perform to a very high level of accuracy and effectiveness. However, there is also a huge amount of activity that actually has never been done before. So one of the things that we will often talk about when we do our practical AI education is two things. One is the practical skills, but secondly is the types of value that you can create. So on the one hand, you can think about how do I take something that's quite dull, quite boring, routine, and use AI to help me do it a bit faster than I would before. But the question then is, so what do you do with the time that gets freed up? And actually, if you talk to a lot of companies and individuals, they'll say, there's this whole big list of strategic stuff that I would love to be doing, and I have never had the time to get remotely close to. And actually, that is where a lot of the benefit comes in, is actually how they can repurpose their time. But not only that, is actually this tooling can help you actually do some of those actions as well. So, for example, as a company, we are able to think about how can AI help us make bigger and better decisions than we could ever have made by ourselves, because our human brain power is just too limited, or it would take us so long to get all of that information together that it just doesn't make economic sense for us to do it. And that kind of question you can play through into your personal life just as much into your home life. What sort of better decisions could you make if you were able to use information at a much higher volume than you could today? I suppose thinking about your listenership in terms of some of the decisions about how and where you spend your money. There's some really interesting analysis that things like AI can help you in terms of opening your eyes to blind spots that you might have.
And I think it's really interesting you say that, because one of our viewers commented that her husband runs a real estate company that builds county, state buildings. Mm-hmm. And they, what is it? They were supposed to have this proposal, and then there was not a counter proposal, but a bunch of requirements that showed up. Yes. And usually they get together, the legal team, their construction team, and all these people together. And the last time they put it through AI and says, what do we need to do? And it basically sent it down to simple things that they could do to respond and say, these are the things that we need to do. This is how we're going to do it. It made it real simple with understanding all the language that was put in there, because usually it takes somebody to decipher all that. And they, as opposed to working the whole weekend or a whole week, they were able to do it in a matter of hours.
Indeed. And I suppose also think about from a customer's perspective, if I was the one that put out that extra set of requirements and you were able to turn around your proposal to me to take into account those new requirements in half a day compared to all of your competitors who took 2, 3, 4, 5 days, however long. Actually, that sends me a really strong signal as well in terms of you guys stick at top of mind because of how fast and effectively you were able to answer my new questions. There are some really interesting kind of competitive advantages as well that come from being able to use this. The other beauty is, of course, if you ever get asked about those sort of regulations again, for example, you've now got a really strong template that you can then reuse and repurpose as you need to.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. Hey, folks, stick with us. We're right back with more Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. I truly want to thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you letting your friends, family, and associates know about the show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information inside of the Saving with Steve, and I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, never miss a show, and check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Networks, AMFM 247. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal financial freedom. Hey, you can always go check us out at the Saving with Steve Sexton on the Facebook page. Get all the replays at savingwithsteve.us. Guest gifts, the whole shot. I really want to get back to Hannah. Hannah, one of the big things, and we're just chatting about this on the break, is AI education. If we really think about this, and you know what, for those people a little bit older like me, you know what, I remember when Excel came out. God, does that date me? My PowerPoint, all that kind of stuff. And there was people in the accounting field that used to be printing those things on or handmade spreadsheet, all that kind of stuff. And their jobs just went away because the Excel was so much easier and people didn't have to do all the typing and all that kind of stuff. So they needed less people to actually complete financial statements and stuff like that. So when we talk about education, how should students be preparing? And more importantly, there's professionals that got 20, 30, 40 years to go in the workforce, and now they're just moving into this AI zone that's really taken a lot of hold over the last 3 or 4 years.
Indeed, it's a fantastic question, Steve. So if we think about education, is all about what skills do we collectively need for the future? So if we just pause for a moment and think, what do we think the future is going to look like? So we know that AI is evolving quite fast. We also know that AI is quite broad in the different types of activities and things that it can do. What we know is that the future will probably look different from today, and that technological advancement will continue at least the same rate, if not a bit faster. So if we then step back, what does that mean for all of us as people in the workforce? It means that actually there are some meta skills that will put us in some really good places. So number one, just understanding, how do you communicate with AI in a way that optimizes the response it will give back to you in terms of trying to get to the outcome you're actually looking for? So I can give you a tangible example of that. If I said to you, tell me a story, you're going to tell me a story, any story that you want to make up. If I say, tell me a story about going on holiday to a particular country, you'll give me a story about that because I've given you more specific instructions. Exactly the same thing is at play with AI. I can give you another good little tip, actually. If you're using AI to try and accomplish a specific task, ask it to pretend to be an expert in whatever that subject is. Straight away, just using that single sentence before you tell it what you're looking to do will give you a tangibly better answer. Similarly, sometimes we find that, or there's a phrase which is, the quality of the answers is driven by the quality of the questions. We're not always fantastic at asking questions. So what you can actually do is turn the tables. So when you're talking to the AI, you can say, I want you to ask me questions back. This is the thing I want to achieve. Now ask me questions like you're a journalist to try and define better actually what is the outcome you're trying to achieve. The last little tip actually is talk to your AI. Literally use your voice. If you've got a mic button, click the mic button and talk to it. And the reason for that is that AI works best with as much context as you can give it. And as humans, we just naturally share more context when we talk compared to when we type. It's just easier. And so just those three little things are three examples of practical skills that will make a tangible difference. The other skills that students really need to think about are those kind of meta skills that will put them in a good state for the future. So critical thinking, being able to evaluate what the AI is giving back to you to say, does that sound right? Does that feel right? What sources did it use to come to that conclusion? Do I trust them? Similarly, just the confidence of using AI daily. So if you brought somebody new into your team, let's say it's their first job, you're not going to give them an instruction and they come back to you. They didn't quite do what you wanted them to do. You're not then going to say, I give up, that's it, you're not very good. What you'll probably do is you'll think, they're quite new. I didn't give them the best instructions that I could have done. So that constant iteration and experimentation and having the comfort to try something for it to not quite work, to tweak it, to try again. That is actually a really important skill and something that we see come to the fore for the people that are using AI to the greatest effect. So I know I'm not giving you a list of they should be fantastic researchers or they should be brilliant at maths or science. It's actually these meta skills and the resilience, the lifelong learning. It's actually those types of behaviors that are going to stand people in best stead for the future.
So now here's one big question. A few of the older, I can tell they're older by people who emailed in. The question was, how long can somebody operate without really developing their AI skills?
That's a really good question. And so being very open, it probably depends on what their job is and how exposed or not it is. I would question, though, I would say that if you have ever worked in a team or with other people, I would argue you probably have some pretty good skills that you could use for AI straight away, because the way you communicate with AI, if you turn on your mic and if you talk to it, is very similar to the way that you would communicate with a human. You just need to think of it like this being something that doesn't have all of the past history and memory. So you probably do need to tell it. Imagine you were talking to it for the first time or talking to a person for the first time. Actually, I think a lot of people have a lot of skills. It's just actually having the comfort to try it out in a way that feels safe. And for a lot of people, I know that AI feels quite scary because it's explained using lots of jargon, but actually the best way to do it is just to try something very small, something that you know about, something that is very low stakes, and just gradually iterate, because what you'll find is you'll start to think, oh, if it can do that, I wonder if it could do this as well. And the amount of gains that we've seen from people talking to their friends or their colleagues, and you hear stories and you think, oh, I could do something similar. It's just gradual confidence building, and you'll be really surprised by what you can achieve very quickly.
I think that's wonderful. And I love that answer. It's about taking the steps to do something. So really what you're saying is, for all those people who feel they're a little bit of a dinosaur and don't want to change, you can do little things and be able to change and be easier and easier. But the reality is AI is here. It's going to be here for a long time. And the advancements with AI will be very significant. One of the other things that you talked about was critical thinking.
Yes.
You know, when we talk about curriculums people should learn in school, it's the same curriculum that they learn math, reading, history, all those things, because you have to have that knowledge to have critical thinking.
Yep, absolutely. Just like you do when you talk with your friends and family and they'll say, hey, did you see this thing on the news? Or hey, did you see this thing on social media? There's a part of you that thinks, oh, does that sound realistic? And you're applying your critical thinking in that very moment throughout the rest of your life. So it's very much like that. And for little things that you could try, so for example, if you're curious about something, why don't you try using an AI tool to help you with a little bit of research about that thing that you're curious about? It doesn't mean that you have to believe it all, but you can at least try it and see what it gives back to you. And then test tweaking your question a bit and see how its response changes. Little things like that will just help you understand, okay, this is how it works. And then you can start to take it one step further.
Yeah, it's like during COVID, we all had a Thanksgiving Zoom meeting of Thanksgiving. And it was interesting because my father grew up in the technology. He was an engineer in the missile guidance systems and aerospace and all that stuff. But he didn't know how to use Zoom. So it was really hard until he figured out how, and it took about a minute and a half to show him how, and he's, oh, so this light bulb comes on, you're good to go. Hey, folks, we're having a great conversation with Hannah Tilson here. Stick with us. We'll be right back with more talk on AI.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. We're right here talking with Hannah Tilton. So we're going to start talking about what many AI projects fail. Question is, how to avoid the pitfalls? How do you make something work? This is one of the reasons why Hannah's here. We're just looking for that experience from somebody who's done it.
Indeed. What we typically see is companies often will have brought in some kind of AI tool. They've got an in-house ChatGPT or a version of. So they've got the tool. What they've failed to do is do the education. And what they've also failed to do is do the change management and the cultural piece as well to incentivize their teams to use it. And what you tend to find is there's this tool where people don't really understand, well, how should I be using it? And culturally, is it acceptable to use it? So what we've found works really well for the companies who've adopted it and generated significant value. Firstly, they've got really clear use cases. So they know exactly how they want to use it. They know what is the particular part of the company, the particular workflow that they want to try and leverage it with. And then secondly, that actually they've got real sponsorship right from the very top. So one thing that we've found is for most people, actually, AI, they have this moment of realization where suddenly the light bulb goes on and they realize just how transformative it can be for them in their jobs. The real interesting bit is that moment happens differently for every person, because for each of us to get to that moment, we've got to see it applied in a way that resonates so strongly with us and our own individual role and the tasks that we have to do. And so that's where really personalized training comes in, which is if you spend a lot of time creating sales proposal on PowerPoint and I show you an AI use case where AI is helping to make that sales proposal on PowerPoint, suddenly for you, you think, wow, that for me absolutely ticks my box. For somebody else, it might be actually helping me do some invoice reconciliation. And actually, that's a completely different use case. So getting clear on the use cases is point number one. Getting really practical education across the team so everyone feels like they've got those skills. And I gave you some earlier, they're quite straightforward to learn, but they build that confidence and that skill base. And then lastly is having that culture, which actually really encourages AI. So AI in some companies, it's framed as being this thing that is slightly under the carpet. Whereas actually, if you bring it out to the forefront and say, we're going to use AI as a company as part of our competitive advantage, and we actively encourage you all to use it. Oh, and by the way, our senior leaders, they're going to share their stories about using it as well. Also, those stories around, I tried using it for something first and didn't quite work, but I tweaked it and then I used it again and it did work. Giving your teams permission to experiment, to try for it to not fail, but not quite hit the mark first time round, and to say that's completely expected, completely normal, like you would have with a new trainee that you brought into your company, is creating that culture of psychological safety for teams to actually truly adopt it and to experiment with it day to day.
So what you're saying is create an environment to where the whole company from top to bottom is experimenting, learning, and sharing their experiences. Absolutely. And developing the whole thing to grow. Okay, I see. So buy-in from the top, And that's gigantic. It's gigantic with all organizations. And then the what and the how, that's important. And then is there like a, besides doing that, what else is there involved there?
So there's a couple of different things. So one is stories. So encourage people to share the stories. And also, of course, hold people up. There's fantastic examples of things that have worked really well. We use a model, a champions type model, where actually you can identify a few individuals dotted across your organization who are generally quite keen to get hands-on with AI, but actually they can be seen as the local expert, the local person that people can go and talk to, so that they don't feel like it's really hard work to go and get the advice they need. And those champions dotted around, they are little catalysts for generating those improvements on a team level, because of course it is so personalized and specific to each team. But actually what you start to see is once people start sharing the stories, they really do start to circulate a lot, and those champions can perform a fantastic role in all of that.
Oh yeah, the corporate rumor mill just flies.
It does. Use it to its best effect.
Oh yeah, that's great for everyone. I just think that one of the other things that I think is important is when we all want our programs to succeed every single time. And yep. A lot of times they don't, even if they have all the training and all the support and everything like that. What do companies or people should be looking at if it's not going the right way? So, for example, you hear stories about the legal professions using AI to write a legal document, and it's sourcing cases that don't actually exist because of the communication that somebody's utilizing with AI. So how do you fix things?
This all comes down to, again, it's what use cases do you want to use it for? And then also thinking through each use case, what are the guardrails that you need in place for each one? For example, in the legal example, it's very high stakes. The legal industry is a highly regulated industry, and therefore there are certain checks and balances that should naturally be used. It is a lot higher stakes than, for example, writing some posts for a social media campaign, that kind of thing. And so you should just think about what's the proportional response we should be taking. You can use AI in both instances, but it may actually be that in the former, with the legal use case, you still use humans to do that final approval and check. You may also want to put in place some guardrails on the AI itself. And there are different AI tools that act in different ways, where you say, actually, I'm going to prevent it from using information from the web. I'm only going to permit it to use information from a certain set of documents that I have validated and said that they're highly trustworthy and we're willing to use as source documents. So there are different tools that you can use, and it really comes down to what's the criticality of the information. At Mindstone, we have a phrase that we use sometimes, which is human in the helm. Or human at the helm. You may have heard the phrase human in the loop. And the idea there is that actually the human is checking what the AI is doing. The human at the helm piece is a slightly different view on that, which is, think of it like we are steering a ship. So we're in charge, but actually we might have a whole crew at our disposal, but we're still responsible for the outcome. So if you're using AI, you still have to take responsibility for the outcome that it produces. So if you choose to run something from AI, send it off without checking, actually you are naturally making a decision by choosing not to check it and send it out. So I think that's the key thing, is that for everybody culturally to think about what's the net impact of this piece of work. And therefore, as the human at the helm here, what's the level of checking and the level of kind of governance that I should be applying on top of it.
So that means the integrity of the document and information, even though you're using AI, matters, regardless of what you're doing, because could create many legal implications for any company. or the individual from a defamation standpoint, if it's social media and stuff like that.
Certainly from, if you think it, yeah, it's thinking about what's the end use of this information and then working backwards, does that place any limits on what I would use as the source data coming in? It's a little bit like if you were going to get advice from family and friends about a big career decision or a financial decision, you would pick very carefully who you went and spoke to and who gave you advice. It's very much the same principle here.
We're talking to Hannah Tilson, CEO of Mindstone, about AI. And next segment, we're talking about global winners and losers of the AI race, which is interesting. So there's a lot of front runners right now because we're just gotten started. I'm going to assume that. Am I assuming correctly?
Yes, I think there is a long way for the AI machine to run. And we are very much still at the start. I think there's quite an interesting point, though, Steve, which many people may not be aware of. So actually, AI can be used as a bit of a catch-all term. But if you actually look under the hood, a lot of the big players that we see in the AI industry, they're all better at subtly different things. So, for example, there are certain large language models like a ChatGPT, or like a Claude, like a Perplexity, like a Gemini, that actually are really good at different types of activities. So ChatGPT is very good conversationally. Claude is very good at ultimately what we call managing sub-agents, basically like operating like a project manager. If you give it a big project, splits it up into tasks, and it gives each task to a different team member, they all deliver back, and then it puts it all back together to deliver the project. Claude is very good at that. Perplexity is very good at doing research and it cites its sources. So actually, if you look under the hood, they're not all directly competing with each other over exactly the same space. And so I think that there is still quite a long way for all of that to play through. The other thing that's at play here is that actually the use of AI is expanding so quickly as well. Every single day, you've got brand new activities and tools that are using AI that have never used it before. So the entire market for AI usage is just growing so enormously right now.
Wow. So it's basically front runners in each one of these things, because it's going to be like almost like everything else. Everybody has a specialty.
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah. And actually, when we were talking earlier about skills, one of the things that we're really keen to teach people is part of the art is about picking the right skill for the job. So if I need to do a really deep research project to help me with a strategy paper, say, Perplexity might be better for me than a ChatGPT for that. But for something else, ChatGPT may well be the best tool for the job. And actually, this is reliant on me knowing which one to use in what circumstance. And I think that over time, that will become probably a bit easier for all of us because they're all trying to make the usage easier. But also what we're going to start to see is this increasing connectivity between these chatbots, these large language models and tools. So that's where it gets really interesting and you get into the agentic AI piece. So what that is, that's basically AI being able to use a tool on your behalf. Think of it like being able to use PowerPoint, create you some PowerPoint slides or read PowerPoint to take information off of it and then maybe put the information into Excel for you and then take it out from Excel. There's a huge amount of opportunity there around using agentic AI that most organizations are not really getting fully involved with. And then the reason for that actually is back to what we talked about earlier. Mostly it's to do with level of knowledge, level of education, and then also how do you wrap the appropriate safety guardrails around all of that to enable your team to be using it effectively whilst obviously ensuring that you've got the kind of data privacy and security in place that you need.
That's a lot.
but it's going on.
You know what? It's so cool because I'm going to say it's so cool and weird because I had somebody here on that their company does like the security backgrounds for the dating field. And there's a lot of scammers that use AI. And he was giving a tip on AI hasn't gotten good enough. And one of the things you want to do if you're talking to somebody on the like on a dating app is put your hand in front of it, have them to put their hand in front of their face because you might actually see their real face. Or ask if it's an AI type situation to take a, hey, it's sunny outside, take a picture of where you are. Could you send it to me? You can really, those two things could tip up somebody who's trying to scam. And that part is scary for a lot of people, especially older people. So,
yeah, and I think there, Steve, because there's an really important nuance there, which is, so you've alluded to AI is now able to use different mediums. So originally, it was very much you wrote text to it and it would write text back to you. Now it is able to produce sound, music. It's able to produce images, it's able to produce videos and so on. And there it is incumbent on all of us to keep thinking critically about how it may be used. I would say in the video situation, that's one that we see happening less in the professional space at the moment, but certainly in the personal space, and definitely being aware of these little things that you can do to protect yourself absolutely is very smart. And of course, it always goes, if you're unsure about anything, don't do anything, spur of the moment, always step back, reflect. And of course, you can always revisit. So definitely would encourage people to do that. Yeah.
No, that's great. I appreciate that. I appreciate that response. And I think it's very important for people to take a moment and think about what they're doing, even if they're thinking about the next step with AI for themselves. You know what? It's interesting. People want to come on the show. We get lots of people want to come on the show, but a lot of times we see the ones that you can tell it's an AI response just by the way it was written. It's so perfect. There's no real language in there. So we're like, oh, okay, they're just sending it out to everybody. Or nowadays people are getting that AI phone call to get a loan. They're just being left on their cell phone. You probably get them. I get them. I get 10 a day. But so it's really important if somebody's going to use it, they use it for the right reasons, number one. And number two, it can significantly enhance your life if you learn how to use it like the right way. But the other thing that you're telling me is you don't have to be young or old. You just have to learn and have to be curious about asking questions.
Absolutely. I think if I was going to give one takeaway, it would be experiment. Find a way to do it in a way that's safe. You don't have to tell anyone about it. You can literally just download it on your phone, on your computer, play around with it, see what it gives you back. But just to get the sense for what it can and can't do, because for a lot of people, it's just the fear of the unknown at the moment, because it's made out to be this big, scary thing. And when you start to play around with it in a very safe space like that, actually, you can quickly learn how it might help you out.
I think it's helped me out tremendously as well as my businesses. And I'm just really grateful for it. But I appreciate you being here today, Hannah. If somebody wanted to reach out to your company to get help for the things that you do at Mindstone, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the best place to go is to our website. So that is mindstone.com. And on there, you'll find two things. You'll be able to get in touch with us directly if you have a company and you're thinking about how do I transform my company using AI. But also if you're an individual and you just want to get some of these really practical AI skills, we actually run training courses, 4-week training course, 10 hours over 4 weeks, really personalized to you that you can get through our website. It's called our Practical AI Competency Course, and they run once a month. So that's how I first came across Mindstone. I actually just bought it and did it for myself because I thought it would be useful.
That's wonderful. And you know what? I'm probably going to be the first one to sign up for one of your courses.
Wonderful. Thank you, Steve.
No, I need a lot of help. I'm using it, but I know there's so much more that it's capable of, and it can make life so much easier for so many of the people that work here and do many other things. Hannah, I want to thank you so much for being here. This has been wonderful. I've had 6 or 7 ahas here, so it's been great. Folks, again, Hannah, thanks for being here. So folks, with that, I want to thank you for joining us here on Saving with Steve. I wish you all a safe, happy week, and we'll look forward to chatting with you next week right here on Saving with Steve. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio.